前英国首相利兹·特拉斯日前在英国伦敦接受美国之音独家采访，特拉斯对他所说的中国日益扩张的威权主义威胁发出了警告，他呼吁西方国家采取更强硬的立场来阻止北京在经济和军事领域的侵略性步骤，包括建立经济版北约。这位以对华强硬著称的英国前首相说，习近平取消国家主席任期限制是他对华态度发生改变的关键转折点。以下是美国之音特约记者李伯安的采访。
Liz, thank you for coming to talk to us today. My name is Lyndon. I'm from The Voice America. I'm here covering UK-China news and EU-China news. You have been in the frontline politics in the UK for more than a decade. You started from education minister to prime minister. You have launched lots of great policies in the British history. Like this weekend, Rachel Reeves is going to China to visit. And some commentators said they're going to reset the tie with China to a better stage. Do you think that's where worrying trend, and if you were Prime Minister today, what would your solution to the data?
I think, frankly, they're desperate. Mm. You know, the British government, the Labour government, is in very serious trouble. The gilt rates, the borrowing rates, are the highest they've been since 1998, when the Debt Management Office was established. The taxes are too high, and it is driving businesses out of the country. It's driving enterprise out of the country. We know, and this is being hinted at already, that Reeves is planning further tax rises because the other tax rises have actually been negative because it's reducing the amount of activity in the economy, national insurance, inheritance tax increases, all of those things. So I believe the Labour government are desperate and they are turning to anybody who they think can help bail them out. But of course, turning to China is not who they ought to be turning to, because it is an authoritarian regime that does not have Britain's best interests at heart. The Chinese regime don't believe in freedom. They want to expand their power base. I think it's very dangerous to become strategically dependent on China. It's one of the reasons that I advocated and pushed for the CPTPP, which is the Pacific Trade Area. It doesn't include China, because I wanted to diversify away from China. Yeah. And I don't think they really have any understanding of what drives the economy. I think they are in a very difficult situation. Now, with President Trump coming into office, the ideal partner that we should be working more closely with is America. It's a country that does believe in freedom and democracy. It's a country that is open to further trade with the UK. And that is what the Labour government should be doing. They should be cutting taxes, getting on with fracking, getting on with changing our planning laws to make it easier to build things in this country, and seeking to do a trade deal with America. Unfortunately, they don't understand that, and this country is headed for a very, very difficult financial situation.
In 2 years ago, you were in Taiwan, right? You were the first prime minister after Margaret Thatcher, the first one to visit Taiwan. That was a big move. And today we are still talking about whether or not like America will protect Taiwan and UK's role in it. Like on this, how do you think the UK and US should collaborate to protect Taiwan and freedom and the free trade?
I believe that Donald Trump being in the White House will make the world much more secure. President Xi, President Putin, the Iranians respect strength. And Donald Trump demonstrated that strength. And I think it's very important that the Western world ally together. I've advocated for the idea of the economic NATO, where Western countries take a common approach to things like protecting Taiwan, expanding economic links with Taiwan to make it harder for Xi to have ambitions towards Taiwan.
Yeah. In your book, I've been reading for the past 2 weeks, you mentioned it was because of the weakness of the West that led to the authoritarian regime. They can do basically whatever they want to, right? What are the specific weaknesses like you observed in the past few years? You mentioned Trudeau and Macron. Like from your, as your, in your time as ministers, what did you see personally?
So, well, first of all, they didn't do enough to power the Western economies and allowed China to get too much of the advantage. What do I mean by that? China was allowed to join the World Trade Organization as a developing country and committed things like intellectual property theft, subsidizing state industries and undermining free market trade. So that was one thing. Next thing is net zero. The West, particularly the UK, adopting very strict net zero policies, not doing enough to expand their oil and gas industries, allowing regimes like Russia and Iran to benefit from high oil prices and to be able to fund their armies. Also, the weak approach on defence. Many NATO countries, particularly in Europe, are spending less than 2% on the defence budgets. They were complacent after the end of the Cold War. They thought, it's the end of history, we don't need to worry, and did not build up their defences enough. So in all those ways, the West was weak. But the final thing I'd say is there is a tendency amongst the West and the left on the West to self-hatred. So criticising the basis of Western civilization, whether it's anti-colonialism, the Black Lives Matter movement, the woke movement, questioning the, well, claiming that it's possible to become a man if you're a woman and it's possible to become a woman if you're a man. No, it isn't. You know, sex is biology, biology is sex. So there was all that sort of navel-gazing and questioning of the very basis on which our societies have become successful.
You mentioned the complacency and the self-hatred. Do you think the propaganda from places like China, Russia, Iran play a part in it here in Britain to the youth, also in America as well?
Definitely. So I think some of it is internally generated. I think there are elements of left-wing intellectualism that is self-hating, and we've seen that in our universities. But I also believe that some of that propaganda is funded by Russia, Iran, China. And you know, we've seen a lot of Chinese infiltration into our universities in particular. We see a lot of propaganda coming out of Russia. So this is all part of the problem. But ultimately, those regimes wouldn't be successful in what they're trying to do if they didn't have allies inside our countries, and they do.
Do you think the biggest problem right now are the people who are supporting them domestically in Britain? But we don't seem to have any legislation to handle that, right? The foreign influence from China has been getting worse and worse. There have been lots of spy cases going on. The latest one was one having access to Prince Andrew. And what's your thought on that?
Well, we did pass legislation to have proper investment screening of countries and organisations that are investing into the UK. I don't think it goes far enough, and I don't think we go far enough on things like trade policy. But my view is the UK can't act alone. We need to act with allies like the US, like Europe, to take a common position on where we should be trading with China, where we shouldn't be trading with China, the type of goods that we want to export. I don't want to see technology from Britain or America being used as a way of surveilling Chinese citizens. You know, I'm very concerned about that. So these are the types of area that the West should be focused on. And just very aware, there's no such thing as a free lunch. You know, Rachel Reeves is going over to China thinking China can help bail Britain out of the dire economic situation that she's created. But that isn't true. There will be no free lunch from China.
What do you think China wants in return?
We can see from the Belt and Road Initiative what China wants in return. It wants countries that are beholden to it and indebted to it so that it can exercise control.
Yes.
And that is precisely what we don't want.
China has been using your time, 44 days as prime minister, as a way to attack democracy. They're trying to claim the dictatorship is superior. But we do have many prime ministers, but we do have democracy functioning here. China is using that kind of message, telling the world they're better. How would you say democracy is superior than the dictatorship?
Well, I believe inherently in freedom. I believe that you have to allow human beings to flourish. The issue I had with my premiership was the fact that the bureaucracy, which has become too powerful in Britain, did not want to see policies that give people more freedom. What we see now in China is people trying to leave China. It's got the fastest rate of billionaires leaving of any country in the world because people do not want to live in a totalitarian society, which is what China has become and is. And Margaret Thatcher said, when people are free to choose, they choose freedom. And that is being demonstrated. Why do you say many people want to get into the United States? Because it is a beacon of freedom. And a central planning, which is at the heart of the communist a way of doing things, doesn't work. And it's been shown to fail in the Soviet Union. I've said President Xi is now taking more control of the Chinese economy and strangling entrepreneurship. China's economy is doing worse. None of these things ever work in the long term. The only successful economies have proved to be the free market capitalist economies every time. Yet, socialists will always tell you different. They say real socialism hasn't been tried.
What would you tell President Xi if you see him today? What would you tell him for him to stop his current bizarre economic policies?
I don't believe you can tell him anything. I believe that the only way to deal with China is to show strength, is to show that we have the economic strength, we have the military strength to stop China's ambitions.
You've been in politics in frontline for a decade. What change do you see China like happening? Before, when you were education minister, I read you went to China, you went to Wuhan, you were amazed by their mathematics skills, and you thought British students should learn the same skills.
Yes, and I visited Wuhan before it was famous, and Shanghai and Beijing. I also visited schools in Tokyo, and in Korea, as South Korea as well, to see the East Asian method of teaching mathematics. And we brought some of those techniques to Britain because it is the way it's learnt is very, very effective and very good. And in fact, the performance of English pupils in mathematics went up the global league tables after we did that. So I am an admirer of the method of teaching mathematics. As I say, the teaching of mathematics was very good, but you could see the effect of the suppression of freedom of speech on the ability for people to be creative and entrepreneurial, and that struck me as a fundamental problem about the way China operates. And I had all sorts of issues when I was Agriculture Secretary with shipments being stopped by the Chinese authorities because of particular issues that were found, which I didn't believe were wholly genuine. So what I saw was the capricious way in which the state operates. And that was very worrying and opened up my eyes to some of the problems.
Did that change your perspective on China to the later on?
Yes. That changed my perspective, but also when President Xi essentially declared himself life president, that, I think what a lot of people in the West thought in the 1990s and 2000s, that if the Chinese economy opened up, then that would be accompanied by more social freedom. The economic freedom would be accompanied by social freedom. But then it became clear that actually Xi was cracking down on freedom. And of course, we saw that very blatantly in Hong Kong. We've seen that with respect to Taiwan and also with the Uyghurs in Xinjiang. And that hope that through economic freedom, China would become more free has been completely dashed.
There must be a disappointment to you, right? You have been such an advocate for freedom, but when you saw China was doing that, didn't get better. What did that make you feel?
I think it is sad. It's very sad because there's nothing I would love to see more than a free China and a free Russia where people could live their lives without fear of arbitrary state action. I would love to see that. So it is very, I suppose it's a more realistic and less idealistic interpretation of the world.
I was talking with an MP in the Conservative Party conference about this topic, about a free China. How would that benefit Britain? But that person told me it's not Britain's business about China becoming a free country. And she also mentioned, like, it's nothing we can do about Taiwan. But that seems to be quite common among the Western politicians. But you, clearly, you're different. Like, what made you decide that you think Taiwan is also UK's business, or the Chinese freedom is UK's business as well?
Well, I think that if China becomes more powerful and takes over Taiwan, that will have a huge implication for the world. You know, many important goods are produced there, critical minerals, chips. It's a very important shipping lane as well. It will be a disaster for the global economy. So on a purely economic front and geopolitical front, allowing a totalitarian state to become more powerful in the world is disastrous. And we saw what happened last time. Totalitarian states were able to become more powerful. We ended up with the Second World War. And the West, with respect to the Soviet Union, took a very strong stand. Reagan's mantra was peace through strength. And that is the strength I think we need to demonstrate. So all of us in the free world need to care about China and we need to care about Taiwan. As far as I'm concerned, Taiwan is on the frontier of freedom. And if you allow the frontier to go under, and we can see Israel is also on the frontier of freedom with respect to Iran. Ukraine is also on the frontier of freedom with respect to Russia. If we allow these places to go under, totalitarian dictators won't stop there. They won't stop there, and we will end up in a much worse situation. And the history of the world shows that appeasement doesn't work.
Yeah, but you mentioned the economic performance of collaboration in the West. But in terms of if there's a war coming, like in 2 years' time or in 1 year's time, we don't know which day China will launch an attack on Taiwan. If that day really comes, how do you see the UK, EU and America working together to protect the freedom?
Well, the best form of defence is deterrence, of stopping China believing they will get away with that. This is why I'm a passionate supporter of Ukraine. I think it sends a very bad message to President Xi if Russia is able to take Ukrainian territory by force. President Xi has to know that there will be no easy way of him taking Taiwan. That's what the West has to show.
Mm. How could the UK collaborate with Taiwan in a much better way?
More trade. Supplying Taiwan with the weapons and defences it needs. Mm. Those are the two ways.
Yeah.
And talking about Taiwan, not being, bullied by the Chinese government to not talk about it.
I think earlier last year, there were some leaked documents in the political, they were indicating you were expediting some weapon sale to China, which might be harmful to Taiwan. Like, what's your response to that one, though?
Frankly, people who don't understand the difference between the role of a constituency MP and the role of a government minister. So all of the exports to any country, and I think the experts in this question were industrial exports. I don't believe they were what you're talking about. But the point is that an MP has a responsibility to represent their constituents to government departments. What I was doing is I was writing to the government department saying, my constituent hasn't got a response from you. That is literally the job of an MP to do that. It wasn't advocating it. It was simply saying, there's a bit of the British bureaucracy that hasn't given my constituent an answer. Please give them an answer. In the same way as if I have had a constituent who said, my welfare payment has not come through, I would have spoken to the welfare department. I wasn't saying I agreed with the fact this welfare payment exists, but my job is to represent that local person or that local business. As a government minister, the job is to decide which things ought to happen, which benefits ought to be paid, which exports you should be able to send to China, which ones you shouldn't be able to send to China. But as a member of parliament, your job is to represent people. That is the job.
Thank you for your answers. Really great to talk to you.
Nice to speak to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.